Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Kakin for Jane Lindholm. Choosing where to go to college can be an exciting process, but considering a single year's tuition at many private colleges and universities can top $50,000, deciding on a school can also be incredibly stressful and raise a lot of questions, like how much financial aid do you really qualify for? How much will 4 years at your preferred school truly cost? And what's the best way to compare offers? On today's show, we wanted to help sort through some of those questions, and here with me to help do that is Audrey Grant. She's a senior at Hazen Union High School in Hardwick, and Audrey is fortunate enough to have received several college acceptance letters already. Congratulations, by the way, Audrey.
Thank you.
And welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you for having me.
So those acceptance offers are the good news. The hard part, which we'll talk about today on the show, is how you weigh the pros and cons of each of those offers and find the best school at the best price. And comparing financial aid is not easy or straightforward, so we've asked Lindsay Carpenter to join us on the program today. She's an outreach counselor at VSAC, the Vermont Student Assistance Corporation. And Lindsay, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So before we get too far in the weeds, Lindsay, give us a brief overview of what you do as an outreach counselor for VSAC.
Sure. So I work for a TRIO program called, Educational Talent Search. So the goal of that program is to work with first-generation low to moderate income students on college access. And so I meet with students at area schools. Audrey and I meet at least, well, now that she's a senior, we meet at least like once a week to just help with that process, depending on where they're at grade-wise, but also in making the decisions on what do you want to do, where, what colleges have those programs, and how do you get there.
So you've got some extra service, Audrey, at your fingertips, which is great. A lot of folks listening may not have those services, but hopefully some of the things we cover today may help them as well. So, Audrey, I had a chance to see copies of the four letters you got from schools that you had applied to with their various offers of financial aid. And I have to say what struck me in looking at all of them was, number one, they were all completely different. They were laid out different, looked different. And they were kind of confusing, actually, upon first read. You're not in your head. So
yes,
I would love it if you – I'm going to give you the one from, I think, Marymount, Manhattan. Do you have that one?
Yes, I do.
And I don't want you to actually go through the numbers per se, but just read some of the points over here. Like, where, what kind of aid were you getting from them?
Okay. So from Marymount and most schools, you get, like, their own financial aid, so financially coming from the school. Then I am also a Pell qualified student, so I get the most money from the federal Pell grant. And then within that, I also get the SEOG grant. Honestly, couldn't tell you what that is as well, but I know it's more federal money. Yeah. So throughout all of the schools, you see like the school aid and then the federal aid.
And then there's something called MMC grant.
Yeah, that's the college. So that's the Marymount Manhattan grant. And they also sent me more information about that specific one as well. And then like down at the bottom, it's like self-help aid, which is directly loans. They're referred here as direct subsidized and direct unsubsidized loans, and a direct plus loan, which is the parent's loan. I am not involved in that at all. And then federal work study, which is also something that each school offers you, but it's different. The amount of money that they offer you is different for each school as well. Yeah, I mean, that's about it. And some schools also have, like, they'll have more named scholarships from their school, and there's no clear understanding about, like, is this money per year? Where is this coming from? Do I have to pay it back?
Well, and I was struck by, there's one line, there's a lot of numbers on this page, a lot of text, but there is sort of one clear area where it says total awards $63,804, which is really impressive.
And that's more than the total cost to go there. But what they're including in that is your loans, which for this one school came to a total of $21,000 per year. That's not money that I want to be taking out in any regard. So ultimately, when you look at it, if I still take out the federal subsidized and unsubsidized loans, I'm still going to be around $40,000, which is less than their tuition, which is not explained on here that if I if I don't do the direct loans, which my parents apply for, which is the $20,000, I'm still paying so much more.
So I want to just jump in. Lindsay Carpenter, you're sitting quietly, but you're nodding. And, you know, we're only talking just briefly there with one of your letters, mm-hmm. one of the offers, which lists some different loan possibilities and awards. But it is not clear cut at all. And what are you seeing from students, including Audrey, that you're working with getting these letters?
Sure. So, you know, say Marymount is this particular college is that student's dream school. So they get in, which is exciting. And then they get this financial aid letter, which is it's a great letter in terms of gift aid. But then what's happening is they see that they have total awards that's more than the cost of the school. And they're like, that is awesome. I can go to this school. But what they don't understand typically is what taking out a loan in general means and what it looks like over time. And so that is part of my job, and it's part of my job, and it's also part of my moral compass, which is to make sure that students and families understand what taking out $21,000 a year looks like once in general, but then once you graduate college. And there's lots of great calculators out there that families can use to put in, you know, like, so $80,000 over 4 years, like that's what they'd take for 4 years. And it will put in the typical interest rate. And then it will calculate for you what you need to make annually in salary to pay that loan back. And so when they see that number of, say, you know, you need to make $85,000 a year to pay back this loan, then we talk about, so what are you going to do after college? What's your career goal? And we're like, I don't know that that's going to be feasible.
You put it in perspective.
We do. Yes. So that's the part that can be really frustrating, because it's just like they get really elated and excited and then very deflated. And it's hard to pick them back up sometimes.
So, Andre, as you were looking through these various offers with your family, and do you have family members helping you with this process? You're nodding. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, because some students don't. They're doing it all on their own. But I'm just wondering, what was your first reaction as you sort of spread out these letters on the kitchen table? Did you understand them? Were they confusing? How did you interpret them?
All right. So the Marymount Manhattan one was the first award letter I had received. And I think what's really hard for me in particular is the tuition for the school is and the total for room and board is more money than my parents usually make in a year. And immediately going into it, it's hard immediately, especially sitting down
so
with
stressful.
My parents. Yes. Like, and honestly, when I got this and I saw that, okay, I would still have to pay $20,000 in the loans, I cried. It was so overwhelming. It was during a drama club rehearsal, and I had to go to my director and just be like, give me a minute. Like, I need to just cry this one out. And it was disheartening, for sure, because this was my first one, and already I can't see myself.
It seemed insurmountable.
Yeah, I cannot see myself being able to do this path, to be able to pay this off. That is not feasible for me. Even if I do become successful later on, post-college, like, this is not something I want to be carrying on for years to come.
Before we go any further, I would like you, Lindsay, to kind of explain the different types, very briefly, of financial aid that are available to students and how they're different.
Sure. So there's need-based aid, which is typically calculated once a family completes the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. So there's the federal grants, and there's grants from colleges, so that's free money that you don't have to pay back. There are scholarships like Audrey was talking about at the beginning of the show that colleges will award students, and that's typically based on merit, so their grades. But then there's scholarships that students can actually apply for, and that money you don't pay back. And then there's work study, which again, you have to qualify for. And it does require you find a job on campus, hence work study. And then there are loans, so money that you have to you can borrow to use to pay for college, but you do have to pay back.
And how do you suggest that when parents and students get these letters and they're sitting down together maybe and trying to compare and contrast them, what's a good way to do that?
So what I do with my students is we write down, okay, what's it going to cost to go to this college? What's the tuition and fees, so to take classes? And then what's, if you're living on campus, what is room and board, and then any other. So those are what's called billable costs. So I look at that first with students. So let's just to make it easy, we say it's $32,000 for both of those items. Then I will look at the letter, and I will sometimes even just write out again what the gift aid is. So we'll list that out, get a total for that, and then subtract it from the total cost of the college so that they can get they can see what their unmet need amount is, what it is they'll need to borrow, because that's the number that we kind of care about. So then every financial aid letter will list the direct federal loans for the students. And so a first-year student will see a total amount of $5,500. So we'll deduct that. And then we'll see what else is remaining in terms of need and have a conversation of if it's $3,000, which I would, in my opinion, it's a manageable amount, how can your family find that or how can you find that? Have you done some scholarship searches? Are you working? Are you saving? So I really break it down for them in that regard, and then we compare what those remaining balances are.
And Andrea, as you've sat down with your parents and sort of done this, have you followed that? Have you gotten spreadsheets, or what have you done to kind of puzzle this out?
I mean, even if I don't have an appointment with Lindsay, I know that she's always there on certain days of the week, and I can always go to her if I have questions. I think it's hard to talk to my parents about this kind of stuff in general, because finances is a very tense subject for most families. But definitely, like, spreadsheets are my friend. I have a spreadsheet just out for, like, colleges. If I've heard back from them, how much it's going to end up costing me, and how feasible it actually is to go there. And that's what's been really hard, is, like, trying to understand how much I have to pay back. And that's something where it's, like, even sitting down with my parents, like, I have to explain to them what everything is, because they're older and they applied to colleges and it was different then and way cheaper. So I have to explain to them, like, these are the loans. I don't have to pay interest on the subsidized, but I do on the unsubsidized, and what that looks like. So definitely, like, sitting down, telling them, like, it's going to be okay. And it feels very, like, roles reversed ultimately, because I both have to calm myself down and them to ensure, like, we're going to get through this no matter what. You just have to bear with me, like, getting us through it.
Right. So. Listeners, you can join our conversation by calling 1-800-639-2211. We're talking about the stressors involved in trying to pick a college that you can afford and sort through all the financial aid packages. If you're lucky enough to get them, then maybe you can get them. I wanted to go to the phone lines now and take a call from Kate, who is calling from Montreal. Hi, Kate. Welcome to Vermont Edition. Thanks for calling. Kate. Are you there? Well, I think looks like we can't get Kate on the phone, but she was talking about how Vermont students might want to consider colleges in Canada. Great education, she says, at much less cost. She's from Franklin County, Vermont, originally, and you're nodding your head. Audrey, is that something you've thought about?
Well, it's not something I've thought about personally, but my younger sibling, Ollie, was looking at a school in Canada, and we were on the website, and I was trying to help them through it, and there was no clear direction for American students to apply to Canadian schools. And, like, I, of course, didn't go to my guidance counselor. I wasn't at that point yet. But even as just a student wanting to know, there was no clear navigation. And I know for Ollie in particular, like, they really loved the idea of the school, and they loved what it had to offer, but it's just even more confusing, especially because, like, does my federal financial aid apply to a school outside of the country? And how do I get Canadian financial aid? And what does that look like with American taxes? Like,
Right. Well, Lindsay, why don't you jump in? Because you're nodding with that.
Sure. So I just want to say I appreciate that comment from Kate. And I do recommend that students look at colleges in Canada, as I know many of my colleagues do as well. There's actually a Canadian college fair tour that happens in the spring. So we do encourage that. But that being said, as of now, students cannot take their federal student aid out of the country. Mm. So that does create a barrier for some students, as well as what Audrey is saying about just the process of applying to a college in Canada. You know, we figure it out, and many students do apply to schools there, like McGill or Bishop's. But sometimes there are some barriers there to keep them from attending.
And I'm curious, too, you know, students like Audrey, who have multiple offers, can she and other students negotiate with colleges and say, hey, I'd really like to go to school A, but school B is offering me this. Can you meet that?
Yeah, and I do encourage my students to do that. If there is, you know, a close sort of gap there, you know, if one school's giving $5,000 extra, I might say, you know, let's call their financial aid office and see if there's anything else they can do for you. Because ultimately, colleges want the students they accept and can sometimes make some adjustments.
And, you know, Audrey, you were lucky enough to have a counselor like Lindsay working with you closely. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine there are a lot of families out there thinking, well, we didn't have that. So what sort of services are available to families who are starting to sort through this process and could really use some help in Vermont?
So the mission of VSAC is to provide information and resources to all Vermonters of any age to help them achieve career and educational goals. There are VSAC counselors in they're not in all high schools in Vermont, but they are all over the state. And we do offer certain financial aid workshops in the fall. It's what we call our financial aid forms workshop. So it's open to all seniors and their families to come in, hear about the FAFSA and Vermont grant, and then actually file. And we're in our spring season now where we're offering a managing college costs and financial aid workshop. So those are designed for like sophomores and juniors and their families to just start thinking about and hearing about the process. And there's great resources at VSAC in Winooski. So even just to call them or go to our website, vsac.org, there's lots of resources there for how to pay for college, how to navigate the process. That's why we exist, is to help Vermonters reach those goals.
Wow. Well, you've got so much to think about, Audrey, and I wish you well in the selection process. And when do you have to make your final decision?
Most colleges' decision day is May 1st. And I heard a horror story the other day about someone who didn't even get accepted to their dream school until May 1st, and they had already put a deposit on another school. So I'm like, I already have nerves about like making that decision, like which one is the right for me. And unfortunately, like it does come down to financials, and it does come down to how much I can feasibly pay to go to a school, which, you know, disheartens me from going to my dream school, because I really wanted to go to Marymount for a long time. I switched my career path and ultimately other schools became more feasible. But like this was something I had my heart set on for a long time. And unfortunately, it isn't as feasible as I wish it was. And that just helps weigh in on the decision that I ultimately have to make by May 1st, 2 months.
All right. So. Well, Audrey Grant is a senior at Hazen Union High School in Hardwick. Audrey, thanks for sharing and good luck to you.
Thank you.
And Lindsay Carpenter is an outreach counselor with the Vermont Student Assistance Corporation. Lindsay, thanks to you for being on the show and answering some of our questions.
Thank you.
I'm Nina Keck in for Jane Lindholm. Today we're talking about the ins and outs of college financial aid, what students and families need to know to figure out which college is most affordable. And here to help us do that is Marilyn Cargill. She's Vice President of Financial Aid Services, Research and Marketing for the Vermont Student Assistance Corporation. Marilyn, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Amy Noyes is here. Amy was awarded a fellowship from the Education Writers Association to report on the challenges facing small independent colleges in Vermont. She spent the past 6 months talking with college presidents, students, staff, and faculty on campuses around the state. And Amy's here to answer your questions about Vermont's colleges and universities. Thanks to you.
Nice to be here.
We've got a lot of callers lined up, so let me go back to the phone lines now and chat with Mary, who's calling from Stowe. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. Thanks for checking in today.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. As you may know, Stowe has switched away from traditional grades for students, and I wondered if there's any data about how colleges are looking at non-traditional scoring and grading as they evaluate applications for incoming students.
Amy, you're nodding your head. Go ahead.
I looked into this a few months ago. basically what I heard back from a lot of the college admissions counselors is that they are used to seeing all sorts of transcripts. Specifically, I was speaking with folks at Middlebury, and they say, look, we get transcripts from all over the world, let alone all over this country where they all look different. So they felt pretty secure in their ability to compare apples to apples when it came to different types of transcripts, whether they're ABC grades or 1 through 5 grades, as I think Stowe now has, some have no indication at all. It's just words, descriptions of students and the work that they've done. So these guys are professionals. And they're used to looking at all sorts of transcripts.
They figured it out. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go now to Don. He's calling from Manchester. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a very timely subject. From a personal note, I put 3 students through college, and part of their financial package that they get usually includes a work-study package. And in my kids, my last daughter's package, there was an $1,800 per year work-study amount, which is figured into her financial aid package. However, usually there are not enough work-study jobs on campus for the student to get a job. So in the end, it becomes the parent's responsibility to make up that $1,800 that is lacking. And that happened for 4 years for my daughter at a private college. So each year, she was always short the $1,800 they promised her in work study.
Because she couldn't get a job.
Well, because the school didn't have enough jobs.
Right.
For the number of students.
No.
Okay.
Don, it's a great question. Let me jump in though, and let me pick that up with Marilyn Cargill, because it's something that we were talking before the program that's kind of an issue.
Don, thank you for that question or that comment. Oh, and you're right that if that student cannot find work, then work study is not a particularly helpful form of financial aid. And it can be amazingly helpful. So some students, and I'm sorry this was not your daughter's experience, some students can line their work-study job up with their major and actually get real-life experience in the field they want to work in. And that's just such a strong opportunity for students to have. But you are absolutely right. In the case where they cannot find a job, they are not going to earn those earnings, and they're not going to have those funds to help offset their personal expenses or their books. And absolutely, the family is going to have to pick up that difference.
Don, did you have another part of your question?
Well, yes. On another note, I am the chairperson of a scholarship through a local church in Manchester. And each year we award a graduating senior a substantial amount, $4,000 a year, for 4 years, as long as the student remains in good academic standing. When we choose that student and award them that scholarship, they then have to report that scholarship amount to their school. And the school then deducts that full amount off their aid package to the student.
Ah.
So in effect, they're not getting our $4,000. It's going to the school to fund another scholarship to some other student.
Huh.
And that happens every year. I've been involved with this scholarship for a long time, and it's a real problem, and it's a real dilemma for the church.
All right. Well, Don, thanks for bringing that up. You know, Amy, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I was just going to say not all schools have that practice, but it is certainly a practice at some schools. And that may be one of the areas where Lindsay was describing you could negotiate with a financial aid office.
Marilyn, go ahead.
One other thing I would say about that is colleges cannot overfund a student. So if they've offered a student financial aid plus loans that meets all of their need, they're required to reduce something. And in the case of a scholarship, if you have a school that reduces either loan or work study because a student has found gift aid, which is what a scholarship is, that is a benefit to the donor and it is a benefit to the student. If they are reducing a school scholarship dollar for dollar, then you are absolutely correct that student really isn't benefiting from that. But frequently, especially at schools in Vermont, we check on this on a fairly regular basis. They will fill unmet need if there is any, reduce loans or reduce work study. And that's always to your student's benefit.
All right. Thanks for that call. Let's go to to Montreal and check in with Aiden. Hi, Aiden. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Go ahead.
So my original comment, I have something to say about work study, too, but the original comment, you know, there are a lot of families out there where FAFSA, from what I understand, is very much based off of the parents' income, you know, because I understand that, you know, when I was a student, and my family, while they made a certain amount of money, you know, their debt was, you know, they had debt. So that is not, you know, part of the equation, you know, a family's ability to actually pay. They might base it off of income, but, you know, a lot of families are accruing more debt. And that is, like I said, not a part of the equation. The other thing about work study is, you know, my experience, because I also attended school in both the United States and in Canada, you know, in Canada, they really discourage, you know, there's a lot more work study, you know, because not a lot of students are not equipped to handle work. And although work study can be beneficial for those that are very, you know, prudent students, those that really struggle with their studies, that really need to focus on study, to have, you know, work study equated really sometimes is kind of a double-edged sword.
Right. It might be distracting them from their schoolwork. And thanks for that.
In Canada, they really take that aside. Like, hey, how much are you working? Okay, well, then maybe you should only take 2 courses, or maybe you should only take 3. But then again, in the States, if you do that, then your federal aid is cut. You know, you have to maintain, you know, 12 hours or more. So it kind of puts you in a very difficult situation.
Right. And I appreciate your point on that. And I can see where it'd be tricky. You want the work study dollars, but if you're struggling in school, you know, what should be your first priority? Listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the complex world of college financial aid today. Maybe someone in your family is trying to decide between schools, or you're wondering how much to take out in student loans. My guests are Marilyn Cargill. She's Vice President of Financial Aid Services Research and Marketing for the Vermont Student Assistance Corporation, and VPR's Amy Kolb-Noyes. Amy's been reporting in depth on the challenges facing small independent colleges in Vermont this year. Marilyn Cargill, should students expect tuition and fees to go up every year? And if so, will their financial aid packages go up accordingly?
Great question. I think it's really fair that students should expect tuition and fees to go up each year. We have examples of schools that have frozen tuition and fees for a single year. I think UVM is looking to do that this coming year. The state colleges did it last year. But for the most part, it's a pretty steady forward step every single year in tuition and fees. Their aid package changes each year based on, again, they fill out the FAFSA every year. The family's financial strength is evaluated every year and determined what the feds think they can afford to do. And then the aid is packaged. But remember, those Stafford loans increase your ability to borrow. So sometimes that increase is covered by more borrowing, not by additional school aid.
And is there any guarantee if you get an aid package for your freshman year that you'll get it all 4 years? I mean, is there any like bait and switch there where, yay, you can start at our school and we'll give you all this money, but now that you're a sophomore or by the time you're a junior, maybe that funding dries up a little bit?
There usually is not a guarantee because, again, they're reevaluating that family on an annual basis. One of the things at VSAC that we advise students to do all the time, for example, if they get a scholarship as part of their package, ask the question, is that scholarship available to me every year or is it only available this year? Is it tied to my grades? Do I have to maintain something in order to keep getting this scholarship? There's really a number of questions that families need to explore with those financial aid officers to really understand what they're being offered.
So parents should be calling, or the students should be calling the colleges and pushing back and really making sure they understand exactly what's being offered to them.
Absolutely, and exactly what requirements are tied to that offer.
Amy, you've been reporting on the challenges facing colleges in Vermont and in Rutland County. Green Mountain College, the College of St. Joseph's, closed in part because so many students were receiving lots of aid. Not enough students were paying full tuition, which right. was unsustainable. Do you see aid amounts at colleges in Vermont going down in light of that?
Well, it's a slippery slope, right? So if you're offering big discounts to attract the top students, you risk a budget shortfall.
Right.
And then on the other hand, if you lower your standards and accept less competitive students who might pay a higher price tag, you may compromise your school's reputation, and that could affect the future number of applications you get. And then the third option is simply to maintain your tuition levels and your admission standards and accept for the fact that there may be fewer students in your next incoming class. And we're seeing some Vermont colleges really go to that third option. Landmark College is one that has specifically said it won't lower its standards, it won't increase its discounts, and I think that's pretty much par for the course. But that has budget consequences as well. So part of the financial trouble Goddard College is currently trying to work its way out of is due to the fact that their budget was built around an overly ambitious enrollment target for a few years, and those targets just weren't met.
Listeners, join the conversation by giving us a call at 1-800-639-2211. It's 800-639-2211. Let's go to the phones and chat with Catherine now. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I just wanted to say that I've had two sons that have graduated from college, one from a university, state university in Vermont, Castleton, and one from a private college, Salve Regina, in Rhode Island. The one thing I wanted to say is, first of all, nobody pays sticker price, and everybody that's going there is paying something different. You never know. Somebody might be going there for $20,000 less than my son went there for, and that's for various reasons. But one of the things I wanted to mention, and we didn't take advantage of it, but there's something called the New England reciprocate for the New England state. So if you live in Vermont and you want to study meteorology, but they don't offer it in Vermont, you can go to a school in New Hampshire that does for the Vermont state price.
Right. And, Catherine, let me pick it up because Amy is nodding her head saying, yeah, absolutely. Why don't you jump in here?
Yeah, that's really something people should be taking a look at if students know coming out of high school what they want to study, and a lot of students don't yet. But if they know they want to study a specific major and that major isn't available in Vermont, there is a New England regional tuition rate that is, I believe it's a little more than the in-student rate, but it's less than the out-of-student rate. So you could go to, say, Rhode Island and study something you can't study in Vermont and not quite pay what a Rhode Island student would pay, but less than a student from outside New England.
And Catherine brought up another good point, and she said that, no one pays sticker price. And it's often pointed out that most families will not end up paying full tuition. You hear terms like net price. And I'm wondering, Marilyn Cargo, can you explain what net price is and how schools figure out what tuition someone gets?
So everyone's charged the same tuition and room and board that's in the same situation. So they start with the same charged price. The net price is what that family actually is going to pay once their aid is subtracted. And we have aid that's based on need, and I heard Lindsay talk about that a few minutes ago. We have aid that's based on desirability of that student. So some students are getting merit aid because they really want that student on their campus. And that student may not have financial need, but they have some other quality that that school is trying to attract. And so net price is the difference between the initial bill, the sticker price, and what is owed after their financial aid. And I would agree with this caller, the vast majority of families do not pay the sticker price, which is why you always apply to the schools you're interested in, and you always wait for your financial aid awards, doing just what Audrey is doing, to see which of those schools you can actually afford.
Interesting post we got. Joel from Brattleboro writes, my son today just posted on how trade schools are a good consideration for a lot of young adults and students. College can be hard to afford, but learning a trade through a trade school can lead to careers in the six figures. Thinking plumbers, carpenters, truck drivers, etc. Both of you guys are nodding, so food for thought for some of you rolling your eyes at these huge tuition bills. I think we'll have to leave it there on that point. Marilyn Cargill is Vice President of Financial Aid Services, Research and Marketing for the Vermont Student Assistance Corporation. Marilyn, thanks for making time to be on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
And Amy Noyes, listeners, you can see more of Amy's reporting on Vermont's small independent colleges tomorrow night at 7:30. She'll be hosting a Facebook premiere watch party.
Right.
Wow, a syllabus for survival. It's a short documentary on how independent colleges in Vermont are addressing the financial and demographic challenges they're facing. Amy, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.